Hi, this is Lady C, and I want to welcome you to another episode of The Critical Thought. In the upcoming segment, I'm going to be talking to Vicky, who is also an ex-JW activist known as the Woman of the Name. Now, she was able to wake up via her son in late 2017 and formally disassociated herself in 2018. Her personal experience is all about how the Jehovah's Witnesses can destroy families. And so in the upcoming interview, we're going to be talking about her own personal experience and how this religion has touched her and her family. Also, this represents the UK meeting the USA. So, Vicky, welcome to The Critical Thought.
Hi, Lady C. It's lovely to be here with you.
I'm glad that you can be here.
Thank you.
So Vicky, would you like to give our viewing audience a little bit of background about how you became one of Jehovah's Witnesses?
Okay, so I joined the organization in my late teens. My background was that I came from a kind of, I had a fairly dysfunctional background from sort of late childhood, early teenage years. And when I met my husband, I was 17, and he had a background where his mum was a devout Jehovah's Witness, but his dad was very opposed. We met and married very quickly, and very soon after we got married, I started a study via his mum and a friend that he had who was still in the organisation. It appealed to me a lot because of my own dysfunctional background. And so kind of seeing these happy, smiley faces, what seemingly united families at the Kingdom Hall was a big draw for me.
Did you enjoy being a Jehovah's Witness?
To be honest, I actually did enjoy being a Jehovah's Witness. I kind of fitted into the pattern of the routine of doing things fairly easily, but by nature, I am kind of that way. If things need doing, I'll just get on and get them done generally. So the pattern and the structure kind of appealed to me. I wasn't one of those that I didn't hate the ministry or I didn't hate the meetings. I was quite happy in that lifestyle because I genuinely believed it was the truth, and so I was just happy to do it.
Wow. You want to share with the listening audience what was the major crack in your foundation?
I can't remember what year it was, but my son had said to me that a member of the governing body was going live on YouTube in a big court case in Australia. I think it must have been 2015 or so. And he said to me, "You should really watch it." I mean, at that time, he was living at home still, but he had kind of waned off from participating in family worship and was only going to the meetings because he was living at home and that sort of thing. But he had said to me, you know, you should watch this live stream of this big court case in Australia. So I saw the Jeffrey Jackson and the other elders that were representing and all the things that they had said. At the time, I was very disappointed and had mixed emotions, but it wasn't enough for me to wake up and pick up and leave the organization. But that stayed there for a good couple of years, and there were some other catalysts going on in our congregation at the time. A ministerial servant had been, well, a brother had been made up as a ministerial servant who had been held back for years. Nobody knew why he had been held back, but all of a sudden he was now announced as a ministerial servant, until it came to light that he had actually had accusations of child abuse. he was serving for about a year, and then suddenly he was removed. And I was fairly close with his wife at the time, and she had confided in me that another person had come forward with an accusation of child abuse. I didn't know about the other ones that they had kind of kept hidden. And so I became very angry with the elders that had made him up as a ministerial servant, because they obviously knew the backstory. So that was going on at the same time as I had already watched the Australian Royal Commission. And so there were lots and lots of things that happened in this period of time, but it culminated in the November of 2017 when the commission released their concluding statements, and they were scathing on the Watchtower and Jehovah's Witnesses in how they've handled accusations of child abuse. And shortly after that, Brother Bro gave a morning worship on the broadcast saying, "We will never change the two witness rule." And that literally just brought me to tears. It was a real dilemma for me. Also, at the time, I had my disfellowship daughter just coming back to the meetings with my newborn granddaughter, and everything came to a head all at once as I really started to wake up. I gave myself permission to look outside and research the organisation from a secular point of view.
Wow, you have a lot going on there, and that's a lot to unpack, you know?
Yeah.
And so what I'd like to ask at this point is, what did you think about your son when he told you to watch the Australian Royal Commission? You know, what was your attitude about him doing that?
Do you know what? I didn't have a problem with it at the time. It didn't strike me that he was necessarily trying to have an impact on my faith. I genuinely watched it with an open mind, because it was a public, it was available to anybody really to watch. I didn't view it as an attack on my faith to watch the Australian Royal Commission for anybody to have mentioned it to me. There were others in the congregation that had seen it as well. Not many, but there were others. And some of those ones, their point of view was that Jehovah was cleansing the congregation, and Jehovah was allowing all of this. He was using basically the nations to bring to light where his people had erred, kind of thing. So, yeah, it wasn't really a big deal at the time that I had seen it.
That's interesting that you said that they thought that Jehovah was cleaning out the congregation, because in my own personal experience, that's all I ever heard when there was a scandal. Jehovah's cleaning things out. That's like a defense mechanism that the Watchtower has taught and trained its members to, you know, adopt that type of an attitude.
Yeah.
What about your husband? Did he also watch the Australian Royal Commission?
He didn't watch it, no. So my husband has a work schedule where he has to get up early in the morning, and for quite a few days he'll have a really long day. Basically, he'll come home, and if it wasn't a meeting night, it would generally be more or less bedtime for him. The commission, watching it on the live stream, was on through the night, because obviously I'm in the UK and it was in Australia, so I was just sitting up watching it myself. It wasn't really a big conversation between me and my husband. I told him various things that I'd seen, but it just didn't seem to be a big deal to us at the time. Well, right. Not enough to make us question the organisation. It wasn't until later, when they released their concluding findings. And then when Brother Bro said they're never going to change the two witness rule, that's the time really that it hit home to me, something's not right here.
And then, as you mentioned, you also had a situation in your own congregation.
Yeah.
With this situation. So at that point, you're like, your ears are like perking up. Like, yeah, what's going on here? Yeah. So now you've got a domino effect of things happening, right?
That's now, right.
You want to tell us a little bit about your daughter? Because now you're talking about your son is telling you to watch the Australian Royal Commission, but something else is happening parallel to that? Your daughter?
Yes. Okay. Yes. So,
back up about that?
Yeah, sure. So the year before the Australian Royal Commission, my daughter had been disfellowshipped. She was very young, and it was shortly before her 16th birthday that she was disfellowshipped. I'm just trying to work out the times. So for a few weeks, she stayed at home after she was disfellowshipped, but because of our attitude to the disfellowshipping arrangement, we made things very difficult for her in terms of restricting her movements, her access to her phone and things like that. And she found the situation unbearable. So my daughter had got baptized, and within a year she was disfellowshipped. And shortly before her 17th birthday, she had decided to move out because of the restrictions that we had put on her because she was now disfellowshipped. She went to live, I think, with a school friend at the time.
Oh, wow. So she left before she was 18?
Yes.
So then at that point, you know, here you are. And so you had no problems with her leaving?
We did have a problem with her going, but we felt that there was not very much we could do about it.
And so just how strict would you say you were?
Very strict. So we had said to her that in the evening she would need to bring her phone and leave it downstairs after 9 o'clock. She wasn't allowed out with her worldly friends. But also bearing in mind she had no Jehovah's Witness connections as well because of being disfellowshipped. So as a parent's point of view, for us as Jehovah's Witness parents, it was that we were trying to get her into a routine of so she can get back reinstated as soon as possible. But obviously from my daughter's perspective, it was way too harsh, and it got her to the point where she just felt it was intolerable to live at home.
Yeah, you know what? When you think about it, you know, you're socially isolating your child. So you, she can't talk to people at the Kingdom Hall. And then you're saying she also can't talk to people that
exactly
are not Jehovah's Witnesses.
Exactly. Okay. That's how it was. Yeah. Well, most certainly I wouldn't recommend any parent now knowing what I know to allow their child to get baptized in any of their teenage years. I think it's a decision that only an adult should make. My daughter had been speaking about baptism for a number of years. I remember her at probably around the age of 12 or 13 expressing that she wanted to get baptized. We held her back and didn't allow her to, but we did have one circuit overseer who said to us, if you hold her back, you might crush her dreams. I would advise you to let her go for it. But we didn't. I just felt that was too young. But then as she came up towards 16, she again had expressed that she wanted to get baptized. I honestly, as a parent, thought it was because she wanted the truth. But on conversations since then, with my daughter, I think it was more a case of wanting to make everybody around her proud, and that she was part of what we were all part of. So that was a pressure that sometimes parents don't necessarily understand that their children are feeling When a child comes to you and says they want to be baptized, in your mind, it's because they want the truth. They love Jehovah. But I don't think we realize just that underlying pressure that is always there for the youngsters. Had she not have got baptized, the situation would have been much different. I think she would have been more focused on her. She was doing an apprenticeship at the time, and I think she would have been more focused on that. And her life wouldn't have had to grow up so quickly.
Yes. You know, I think it's interesting what you said, that she would have been able to focus on different things in her life. But when you think about the Jehovah's Witness religion and this issue with people getting baptized as minors and then being thrust into a judicial case, it's almost like they're in grown folks' business. So yeah. You can only imagine a child who isn't even out of high school, and they're being thrust into what I call grown folks' business. And now you've got me in some kangaroo court. And, you know, these men in here, no doubt asking her questions that from A to Z, things that she probably don't even realize even exists, you know, that you can be doing in life. And now these grown men are, you know, like badgering and questioning her about what's going on, right?
Yeah, and that is so painful. Yeah, because she's been through a lot of trauma from that one night with the intrusive personal questions that she felt compelled to answer, because she was trying to be as honest as possible to get the help that she needed and to stay within the congregation. My daughter, I don't believe she for one second thought that she would be disfellowshipped, because technically she hadn't committed fornication, but it didn't work out that way. But the kind of questions even got her to the point where she started to think in her mind, if I had just said to them, I've committed fornication, that they would have quit with this in-depth questioning so detailed. But it's only since, really, that, you know, since leaving and seeing lots of different YouTube videos and that we've seen that actually it doesn't stop them from asking if whether a person has actually committed fornication or not. These in-depth, very, very personal, detailed, humiliating questions are asked on most judicial committees.
You know, it's interesting that you're saying all this too, and we're talking about a minor. And so you and your husband, of course, were not in that meeting with a minor. So here you have your minor daughter sitting before three men who have no qualifications at all to be even asking her anything. And yet they didn't let her parents go into this meeting.
That's right.
When you think about it, even in a court of law, you can go to the court and be there with your loved ones when they're on trial. Yeah. And here these Jehovah's Witnesses have turned this into some tribunal where you can't even be there to support. And so your daughter couldn't even have other people to witness the questioning.
That's right. And so when she came home from her judicial, she was very, very distraught. And she'd gone up to her room. Her dad went up and spoke with her for a little while. But she never really let on with the kind of questions that she had been asked. So we didn't actually know until quite a long time after. And some of it I didn't realise, even like I've said to you, till really this week, how traumatising that experience was. I suppose as parents at the time, because we felt that these were Jehovah's loving shepherds, that we could entrust them to deal with our daughter in the right way. And one of the elders, when that same evening, called us and said to us, oh, well, I've been in tears over the fact that we had to disfellowship Abby. It's very painful because you know that we love her so much and things like that. So, yeah, I didn't realise what went on in a judicial committee. I'd never experienced one myself. So, yeah, had I known, my reaction would have been very different.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What about the other people that were involved in the case? What was the situation with that?
Okay, so my daughter basically had her name brought forwards because another young girl from a neighbouring congregation had committed, I suppose they would say, her second offence, and she had had a judicial committee herself. And I think in a attempt to stop herself from being disfellowshipped, because obviously this was her second judicial, she had given names of other young ones that she knew to be living what they call a double life. And so she put my daughter's name forward along with a number of others from different neighbouring congregations in our circuit. The thing with that was, which was really out of order, is that my daughter and that young lady, they both got disfellowshipped. My husband wasn't a serving elder at the time, or ministerial servant, and her dad had recently stepped down from being an elder, and they got disfellowshipped. But all the other youngsters who had dads who were ministerial servants or elders, they all got reproof, either public or private. We were spoken to about it by one of the elders, who told us that we would hear that other children were not getting disfellowshipped. Sadly, when you have a father who is a serving brother, the fact that he's serving will sway their decision to not disfellowship the youngster. But we were reassured that Jehovah would deal with this situation in time. But the right decision was made in the case of our daughter. So she ended up, there was just two of them out of the whole lot being disfellowshipped.
That's very, very sad. Isn't it interesting how your daughter was supposed to be accepting the counsel from Jehovah, but these other kids would, you know, eventually be found out and maybe Jehovah would clean things out. So did you think about that at the time, the inconsistency?
At the time, brainwashed as I was, I trusted what I was told, that Jehovah would sort the matter out and everybody would get fair treatment in the long run. I don't think I mentioned this to you before, but the lad that that was involved with my daughter and that what her judicial was for, he never had confessed at the time, and he had gone on to serve in Bethel. But when all of this blew up through the confession of the other young lady, he was removed from Bethel and sent back to his congregation to be dealt with there. But even he wasn't disfellowshipped, and he had basically hidden that from going to serve at the Bethel.
So there was a brother that was a part of that group that actually lied about his
involvement. So all this stuff had gone on almost a year before. And in that year, he had gone to Bethel. But when it all blew up and all the names came forward, he was removed from Bethel, but he was still never disfellowshipped. He just went back to his congregation.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
And his dad obviously was a serving elder.
Yeah. It's like a good old boys network, and the people who are serving in these positions are the ones that their kids, they don't get the full brunt, as it were, of fellowshipping. Right.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So my daughter was penalized, and she wasn't even disfellowshipped for fornication.
Yeah, you said, because when we talked before, you said she didn't even commit fornication.
No.
It was just loose conduct.
Loose. we weren't actually ever told, because I asked her this the other day. I was like, reminded me what it was that you was disfellowshipped for. And she was like, I don't know. She goes, obviously, I knew the things that I did, but we don't know if it was actually classified as loose conduct or uncleanness or whatever. But it wasn't actually fornication. And there were ones that had done a lot worse that had just got off with reproof.
You want to share with the listening audience what an elder that used to go to your congregation or used to go to his congregation told you after he found out your daughter got disfellowshipped?
Oh, so the situation when it all blew up, it seemed to be quite scandalous from far afield. And so we had a brother from our old congregation in London, all the way back in Walthamstow, which is miles away from where we are, call us up. And he was serving as an elder at the time. And he told my husband to not cut my daughter off, not to shun her. But we took that as poor advice. Obviously, he was right at the time, but from speaking with our elders and from the literature published in the Watchtowers, the Awake, the Bible Teach book, all that stuff, God's Love book, that if you were going to not adhere to Jehovah's discipline, because this is, don't forget, this is supposed to be Jehovah's discipline now, that our daughter wouldn't fare well if we didn't do it Jehovah's way. If we were making it easy for her or still, keeping communication as normal with her, that she wouldn't have a chance to respond to Jehovah's discipline. So, yeah, that brother was right at the time, what he said, and he was serving as an elder. But yeah, we didn't take his advice. We went with what the society says.
Yeah, it's interesting how that was just one brother in his opinion. But that was just one brother against thousands of pieces of Watchtower literature saying, right, Don't take it easy. Do da-da-da-da-da, which means that you're not going to listen to him because he sounds foreign to you.
That's right. That's right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. How did things come together eventually for your family?
Okay. So after in late 2017, I think it was after watching, I'd seen the Brother Bro's Two Witness thing on the broadcast. Shortly after that, there was another talk at the Gilead graduation by Brother Numair on a Bible character called Rizpah. And when I listened to that talk, it was like scales fell from my eyes. Straight away, I was like, this is propaganda. It's trying to silence people. He twisted a story to basically tell people, if you know of a situation or if you're suffering in any way or you've had an injustice, keep quiet, keep busy, and lean on Jehovah. And I knew that that was basically a response to all the what had come out from the Australian Royal Commission and following on from the talk from Brother Bro. And it was at that time that I had decided, right, I am just going to look out and see what is going on, what is people's experience of this organisation, whether they're in or even if they're out. At the time, my daughter was coming back to the meetings. I'd recently had a newborn granddaughter, and it was winter time, so I was picking them up and taking them to the Kingdom Hall with me. My husband he was ill at the time, and hadn't been to the meetings for a couple of weeks. And I told him that I'd been watching some stuff on YouTube, and I'd had a look at jwfacts.com, and I said to him, there's something seriously wrong. Like, I'm not going to go to the meetings anymore until I get to the bottom of what it is. And I said to him, and I'm going to tell Abby what I know. And he said to me, hold on, like, don't do anything hasty. Just take her to the meeting. She's almost getting reinstated, all that sort of thing. And I just said to him, I'm done with doing that. I'm not going to put a lid on it. If I go to the meeting tonight, I'm going to end up telling everybody the stuff that I found out. So I said to him, I'm not going. And he got up out of his sick bed, got himself washed and dressed, and he took her to the meeting. But by that weekend, I had told her loads of the things that I'd found out. She'd obviously, through her period of time being disfellowshipped, had come across not as in depth as I had, but she had come across various things that Watchtower was doing that was wrong. And so, and my husband was starting to wake up for his own reasons. And so it all kind of came to a head around the Christmas of 2017. I stopped going to the meetings. We had a steady stream of brothers and sisters come to the house to find out what was going on and to try and encourage us. So I had told every single person that came by about the Australian Royal Commission, about the fact that the brother in our hall had been made up as a ministerial servant, even though the elders knew that he had a prior accusation of child abuse. Basically, anyone that called me or came by, I told them. I was completely open. Then one day the secretary and his wife came by on a Saturday morning after field service. I had the same conversation with them. And his wife let out of the bag, which then helped me to see that a lot of them that are in there, they know all the things that are going on, but they stick with it. She had told me that a lot of the things that I was saying were becoming a big problem up north in Hull. And it was through her saying that I then started to find out what was going on up north. And basically there had been kind of like a mass exodus of brothers and sisters that had seen the Australian Royal Commission, done some research, and loads had all left at the same time. There was a lot of activism going on. So that caused me to then get in touch with some from up that way via YouTube channels and that. But that helped me to see that the elders and their wives, a lot of the time, they do know things that are going on that the regular publishers know nothing of, because she was well familiar with what was going on. And the secretary's solution to me, when I said to him, I can't go out in the ministry in good conscience and represent this organisation anymore, he said to me, how about you come to our group as an honorary member of our group for the day? You can work with me and I'll do all the doors, and then we'll all have tea and cake back at ours. And I just said to him, you just don't get anything that I'm saying to you, do you? You don't understand. How can me coming out with you and you doing all the talking be a solution to all the things I'm telling you that I know about? So, shortly after that, I didn't receive any more phone calls or visits. In the February, we went on a small holiday just to get away from it all and try and figure out where we were going to, take our lives. I took Crisis of Conscience with me, read that there, and then came back and I disassociated a month later. And then my husband disassociated probably about, or might have been a couple of months after me.
Amazing. Now, let me ask you a question. Your son, he is the variable that actually got all this going. So now what's going on with him during the time that you're waking up, your daughter's getting disfellowship? What's going on with him?
He was genuinely amazed that we woke up and left, because I remember saying we'd had a conversation one evening where he had said, if you ever found out that this wasn't the truth, how would you feel? And I remember saying to him, even if it's not the truth, it's the best way of life. So I would be happy to live it. But that just rolled off my tongue, because actually when I think about it now, no, that's why I stayed in there. I did stay in there because I did believe it was the truth. Because when I found out it wasn't the truth, I didn't think twice about leaving. I didn't think about the people that I cared about, you know, staying for them. I just couldn't do it. And so, I think with them always repeating certain phrases like the best life ever and things like that, it just becomes part of your psyche and it just rolls off the tongue automatically. But you don't really think about what it is you're saying. So, I think everybody that knew us was actually really amazed that we woke up and left in the way that we did.
Do you have any advice that you would give to, you know, Jehovah's Witness parents and dealing with the type of situation that you found yourself in with your daughter and all the things that was happening during the time you were waking up and her getting in trouble?
Okay, so my number one piece of advice to any Jehovah's Witness parent would be, don't let your minor child get baptized. Wait until they understand what life is about and they truly understand the consequences that will happen should they find themselves being disfellowshipped at any time. It's only until they understand the full implications of what this can do to their life as an adult, then if they want to, that's up to them, but certainly not a minor child. Also, if you have somebody under the age of 18 who is going for a judicial, you should express that as a parent, you should be there to hear the conversation between these unqualified men who are going to ask your minor personal, in-depth questions, and they're very inappropriate questions as well. And I suppose, you know, the obvious one is if your child becomes disfellowshipped, do not shun them. It is so, so damaging for a young person or a person of any age if they're your child. Since watching a lot of things, different videos, I've seen, you know, society's representatives say, you know, it doesn't break family bonds. I mean, we all know that what the magazines and the books tell us and what we're told from the platform, that you shouldn't have email or text message or things like that. But when it comes into a court situation, the society backs away from that. They say we don't interfere with the family arrangement. So if they're saying that in a court-like situation, it goes to show that they know it's not right. They know that that's a scandalous thing to do. It is so damaging when a person finds themselves out in the world by themselves because they haven't built up a worldly support system, and then you just cut the support system that they've always had, which is you and obviously the congregation that they've grown up in, and you just cut them off and they're just out there on their own. Of course, they're going to go into a pattern of making poor decisions and choices that is going to affect them for the rest of their lives. I can't emphasize it enough.
Right. Now, that was the advice that you would give to a person that still believes this is the truth. Now, quickly, or just sum it up a little bit, what would you tell people who don't know, or they're just coming across this video and they're just doing some research about Jehovah's Witnesses?
As an outsider or as a person who's so for a person who doesn't know about Jehovah's Witnesses who comes across this video, my desire is always to let people know the dangers of this cult. On the outside, you will see happy, smiley families, well-dressed, presenting themselves well because they've been trained to speak well, things like that. You could be taken in by the outside appearance, but this is a destructive cult. It does and it has destroyed many, many lives, families, individuals, even to the point that it's, I think it has quite a high suicide rate of ex-members.
Exactly. So anyway, I want to thank you so much for being on our show and sharing your story, because I know that so many people in the Jehovah's Witness religion, and even people that are not witnesses, can certainly appreciate the words of wisdom and just your personal story and waking up. And I'm really impressed with the fact that you didn't try to turn in your son for sharing the Australian tradition. Yeah.
Thank you. It's been great talking with you.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. And we'll see you all on the next video.
Great stuff.
This program was sponsored by Critical Thinkers.